Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is South Africa's Minister of Women, Ms. Susan Shabangu. Welcome to our show, Minister.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Now, Minister, you have been Minister of Women in the Presidency since May 2014, Member of Parliament in the African National Congress since 1994, Vice Chairperson of the National Labour and Development Institute, Representative, Transport and General Workers Union at Industrial Council, Coordinator for National Women's for Transport and General Allied Workers Union, and in your previous positions, you have been Minister of Mineral Resources from 2009 to 2014, Deputy Minister for Department of Safety and Security, 2004 to 2009, Deputy Minister of Minerals and Energy from 1996 to 2004. A fantastic career.
Well, interesting when you go through it, never realized it.
Minister, please can you share with us, is it your strong sense of duty to our country or your passion for equality and making a difference that has kept you for almost 40 years in the political arena?
Well, I must say, Amelia, coming from a South Africa, which we have today, but also the past, I think it also played a critical role in influencing my being and where I am as a woman, especially starting as a young woman in South Africa. If I reflect back and look at where one comes from, now that one has matured, it's quite clear that patriarchy played a critical role to be what I am today. Because it's about how, as a young girl, we're treated, but also the expectation of society, how do we behave as young girls. So it has really contributed to my being today. That's why my involvement in the struggle for liberation in South Africa, my struggle as a young girl for women emancipation, it's what made me to be what I am. And I believe that it contributed a lot in shaping my consciousness, in shaping my thinking, in informing my political outlook at the end of the day, and being a member of the ANC underground, to where one contributed to the various sectors of our community, within the civil society, within the labor movement in South Africa, but also to the formation or the revival and importance of women involvement in the struggle of liberation in South Africa, and also contributing towards the emancipation of women. So that's what has led to me to what I am today. So I think that influenced my involvement in the struggle of South Africa. But I must also just caution and say, I never thought that that struggle would lead me to government. I had thought it's the struggle of liberating our people, making sure that Mandela gets released from prison and being able to take forward our struggles. And one of the commitments which we made as young people then, to say, we will liberate Mandela in our lifetime. And here we are today. I've managed to see Mandela being out of prison, but also realize also when our icon leave this country. So I think that's what kept us going as young people and contributing to where we are today.
That's a strong legacy to follow and to have those ideals achieved within your lifetime. And talking about aspects from a leadership point of view, that brings me on to my next question. I consider that building female leadership capacity is important for the future of women and to our country. As a woman who has constantly worked so hard to succeed, and should I say almost twice as hard to succeed, how do you see female leadership in South Africa?
Well, I would say female leadership is very, very important and critical for us as a country. And I think we are a blessed country, because South Africa is not seeing female leadership for the first time. You know, you look at the history of South Africa, we have the Mujaji tribe, you know, traditional leader, that tribe which has recognized women leadership even to date. It's a traditional tribe led by women, or the succession is done through women, and they still believe in women leadership. If you go back to the past about the Mandatise wars, those old wars, again, Mandatise was a woman warrior who led struggles against oppression, who led struggles against colonization in society. So there has always been that sense of women leadership in South Africa, and I think that has influenced us. We've also seen also within the broader struggles of South Africa, including the ANC itself, we've seen women like Charlotte Maxeke coming out very strongly in the early 1900s. So at various times, there's always been a reflection of women leadership within South Africa, despite the odds, because they rose within the difficulties. I mean, in the ANC, women were not recognized. They were supposed to work in the kitchen. But Charlotte fought.
She's revolutionary.
Highly revolutionary. Having to break all the barriers, which we've seen then. And as we move forward, we see women like Lilian Ngoyi taking up the struggles, creating women's organizations in South Africa. Helen Joseph coming up with the first charter, by the way, the Women's Charter, drafted by women and adopted in 1954.
And if I recall, that was before the Freedom Charter.
I'm coming to that point. It was before the Freedom Charter. And that is why this year was a very significant year for South African women, because this was the 60th anniversary of the Women's Charter in South Africa. And you know, 2 years later, you had the Freedom Charter, which is very popular. But what is key for us is to realize that women were always at the forefront of the struggles of South Africa, not only in the struggle as a mass, but also in shaping and influencing the vision or the ideal South Africa. So those are the women who came together to draft the Freedom Charter and inform where we are going. If you look at where we are, again, pre-94, women again came together in shaping the Charter for Equality. So South Africa has always had brilliant women who are visionaries. So for me, those are the critical aspects which shows that South African women as individuals, but as collective, are and were able to come together in shaping South Africa.
And in that aspect, the same vein, we're talking about leadership and shaping elements in South Africa. Gender equality is increasingly a global focus, and South Africa's Women Empowerment and Gender Equality Bill is, I understand, currently undergoing consultation and review. And in principle, its aim is about promoting and achieving equality for women across the board. What are your perspectives? And do you think that legislation can help improve gender gaps?
Well, I must say that we've got to first look at what we have and what exists. There are a lot of achievements which we have in South Africa. We have the equality law, which talks about we have to be equal in society and before the law. We have the Equity Act, which lies with the Department of Labor. You have various laws. I mean, if you look at the mining charter, it deals with issues of how do we reposition women within the mining industry as part of transformation. And that on its own, it shows the level of sophistication of South African women in leadership, where they can crack even sectors which were dominantly male-dominated. So if you look at that, it's quite clear that this leadership, at all times, it's there to penetrate various sections which are always seem to be impossible. And I think for us as South Africa, or as women in South Africa, really contributing that way. And where I am today is in the Ministry of the Presidency. One of my responsibilities is to see to what extent have the different laws advanced the interest of women in South Africa, both socially and economically. And my view and the stance I've taken is that the success of women cannot be social. It also has to be economic, because it brings confidence. It makes sure that women can take care of themselves, but also women can contribute to the shaping of the economy of the country. Because if you talk about transformation of society, you also have to make sure that women contribute to that transformation of society. So women become a critical component of shaping that economy. And how do we do that? We can only do that by making sure that women are educated, women are skilled, but also conditions prevailing are such that they can make women to be productive without looking at them as women biologically, but also creating laws or situations where women as mothers can continue to contribute without losing their motherhood or womanhood. So those are the critical issues which we'll be looking at. And as we do that as this ministry, you know, as women advance and become better and become professional, you tend to find that there are unwritten laws which prohibit women in advancing their careers. They're not written, but there's an expectation that as a professional woman, you must not make babies, eh? Because you impact on productivity.
Yes, there's a big compromise in terms of career development. And if you look at the likes of technology leaders, so with Apple and with Facebook recently, they made an announcement where they're trying to postpone productivity in a way where they're offering an incentive for women to freeze their eggs so that they can compete at the same time frames. So they're delaying that reproductive
age. Well, for me, yes, technology is good, but also we must look at it. Do you want to postpone childbearing by freezing your eggs because of productivity, or we need to strike a balance? But also in the world, I think where we are today, we do have an interesting situation. People don't refer to that. Out of Britain, you know, the United Kingdom, we know that precisely because of the delaying and also of women becoming professional, where we're seeing an aging society there, because the childbearing was blocked for a while, but it's catching up with them now. We all know that they're giving incentives to women from all over the world to come and work there, because they're having an aging workforce. So we can't afford to have that. I think women must be given the opportunity. If I crave and want to have babies now, that right must not be
right.
Exactly, that right must not be ceded to productivity or to economy. Our production and our need must be respected. By the way, our women's rights, as we always say, are human rights. Those issues are included and embodied in our women's rights as part of human rights. So I think as society, but also as women, we must not compromise our own rights in respect of the broader society. We contribute, and society must accept us and make sure that if I want a baby now, being a professional woman, I must be able to be given that right. And therefore the society, through the laws, must be ready to accept us by creating conducive environment for us to play our roles as women.
And we have robust legislation in place which
we do have robust legislations as a country, but we also have to make sure that it's not just paper, it happens in practice. Because you can have good laws, extremely progressive laws like we have in South Africa, but if we're not going to come up with the implementation plan which continues to allow women to play their role as mothers, to become pregnant, without losing their professionalism as they contribute to the economy, becomes very, very key. The silent laws, I mean, I must also maybe share with you, the issue of judicial, it's one section where women were compromised. You could not, as a judge, when you get appointed to the bench, you could not have babies. Therefore, it means there was discrimination, whilst the laws, beautiful as they are, but they were discriminating against women. Men wake up and make babies every day. Huh? Just because they don't become pregnant, and therefore it's seen that their lives continue and not get disrupted, and that's discrimination. We must be created space. If I want to have a baby today, the laws must allow me, but also not compromise my career. And I think in that way, when you talk about an equal towards an equal society, then you balance those issues. We can't talk about equal society when we are treated unequally, being professionals, but who don't have the same standards or created an environment where we can be treated the same, because it's unfair. Men wake up, makes a baby, continues working. I make a baby, I'm being penalized. It's just unacceptable. So those are some of the silent laws as we climb the ladder, which are not exposed, and we must deal with those issues in making sure that we sensitize society in allowing women to continue being diverse, but also being in a role in a multiplicity way. So for me, that becomes very, very important.
I think it's a really important point that you've raised and something which we need to take effect in, into society.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro-Soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
Today, we're talking to South Africa's Minister of Women in the Presidency, Ms. Susan Shabangu. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, continuing with our discussion. Going back from a past point of view, you were involved in the anti-apartheid struggle, serving in various capacities, and you were one of the women who led the revival of the Federation of South Africa during the time of high repression, but even late 1978. Leading up to the formation of the Federation of Transvaal Women, you became Assistant Secretary, and in 1981, you were an active member of the Anti-Republic Campaign Committee and were involved in the formation of the Release Mandela Campaign Committee in 1982, which we spoke briefly about. Now, 36 years later, you hold the position of Minister of Women in the Presidency, and you put yourself once again at the forefront of a different kind of struggle. This time leading to the 365 days of activism campaign, which will bring government, the private sector, civil society, and others together in a year-long program to eradicate violence against women and children. What can we be expecting to look for, look ahead to?
Well, I think, coming back to where I started as a young girl, it's very interesting. But for me, where we are with the 365 days, it's how do we translate that into action? How do we make sure that we make a difference? And in my view, we need the whole community for us to be successful. This is a campaign which we have to declare war against the scourge of violence against women and children in our society. Hence, if we approach it, it must be multidimensional. It has to bring everybody on board. That is why the theme we adopted this year, and that's by cabinet, is the Count Me In, Together Moving and Nonviolent. I also say non-sexist, non-racial South Africa. The focus of us saying, yes, it's good to endorse and continue for 16 years dealing with the United Nations call on no violence against women and children in our society for 16 days, it's not enough. This is a monster which you can't just say it's 16 days because it's there in every second of our society. Therefore, it needs that same approach. It needs that passion. It needs that commitment from everybody. One of the calls we've made this year is part of an inclusive approach because for the past 15 years, the focus has been on women, has been on the victims, has been on the survivors. But we've never spoken to the perpetrators. But also, we've never spoken to the caring men, the men who would support and believe that abuse against women and children is wrong. So our campaign this year is also calling upon that constituency, work with us in the eradication of the violence. We're also calling on the religious leaders, the various religious communities. We've brought them on board to participate in the campaign because we know they play a critical role in reaching out to society at various points. They have to be involved. This must be a mass-based campaign which reaches out all corners of our society. The success of defeating apartheid in South Africa was a success based on making sure that all of us, we rally around one particular challenge or problem, which was apartheid.
So there was a collective.
It's a collective effort where even if we have differences, but we identify one common enemy, which was apartheid. And I think that's what we need around this campaign. Identifying one common enemy for us is the scourge of violence, which is so brutal, which is so evil, against women and children. And it knows no color. It knows no race. It knows no creed. That is why we have to rally and work together in fighting this cage. We've got to take it forward. We have to make sure that for the next coming 365 days, we partner at different levels. We bring on board everybody in taking this campaign forward. Today we're launching the hashtag 365 days of activism. It's part of taking it forward. We have launched together in partnership with Crime Line. The media people have come on board because they are very, very crucial in carrying the messages.
It's an influencing environment, and you're reaching
exactly.
The population.
We're reaching everybody. We're reaching various population. The media is able to touch spaces where physically we would not be able to be there. We're also taking it, next year we'll be going on a national dialogue to different points of the country, creating an opportunity for the victims and survivors, but also creating an opportunity for the perpetrators to change, creating an opportunity for the decent people and the decent men to start becoming responsible and making sure that they contribute towards protecting society. That's very, very important. And one of the issues why we believe that this campaign has to be an ongoing on campaign, it's because it also talks to families. It needs to talk to family values. Because as we deal with the campaign broadly, the family unit too, it's violated. Because sometimes it's the parent.
Well, it's this vicious circle that happens, and it's trying to break that to create a better, more improve the values.
Exactly.
Get back to good social models.
Social models which we need. But if you don't reach out to the family values, we can deal with it externally. But the problem starts in the family. That's why it's a much more complex, very, very complex campaign or problem. We need to go to the roots. The first point of call would be the family, which we've got to look at. How do we start changing? How do we socialize our children? The boy child, the girl child. You know, we as parents must play a role in influencing that space. Because if we are able to do the right thing, as soon as our kids go to school, start their schooling, if they are properly socialized, it also means there'll be lesser challenge of abuse by boys or girls. But also, how do we start looking at this campaign in addressing the challenge in a way that as it starts showing itself? That's why as we talk about this campaign, we're also talking about breaking the silence. Don't keep quiet. Don't keep quiet when you see something wrong happening. Break the silence. Because if we're able to focus and observe and break the silence in a way that we say, let's all be counted in solving this problem, I believe that society will be better off. And that's why we're going to all areas to say, if you notice something wrong happening, talk about it. Act to stop it. And that's the opportunity we see for the next coming 365 days as we move towards 2015. We need to work together in an inclusive way and also mobilizing men. I'm very excited to see the various men's forums or men's formations coming on board saying they must be counted in. Because it becomes very important. They can reach out to other men who are troubled for us then to say, as society, we are there to protect both women and children. We are there to create a space for them to feel confident and be able to contribute to the well-being, especially in the economic space of our society.
Well, I think the campaign promises to have a significant amount of deliverables in terms of integrating different aspects of society, having that totally holistic approach of looking at things from an internalization point of view, when we're looking at family structures, family values, and how those are projected on an external basis, and also dealing with that challenging dynamic of culture, of patriarchy, of tradition and religion. Now, Minister, turning towards your ministerial duties, I won't ask you if women representation in your ministry is a priority, as it's a redundant question, mm-hmm. But I would like to ask you if your office has a plan to push the issue of women representation in other ministries as part of your agenda.
Well, I must say that I believe in the empowerment of women, but also I believe strongly as we do that, what we must not miss is to make sure that we scale our women.
So the empowerment
aspect. The empowerment aspect, it's not enough if we don't put the necessary tools in the empowerment of women. And one of those is education. That's why we're going to be forthright when it comes to the empowerment of women in education. You know, having reflected on the professionalism, I also want to say, we're also going to look at women whilst they're at school, especially in higher education. Women who enter the spaces which are supposed to be male-dominated, where do they end up? We must develop interest in that for us to understand why, therefore, if one becomes an engineer, why can't we find them pursuing a career as an engineer? We need to understand what makes them not to advance in that space. Where, I mean, if you're in the mining industry, you then end up being CEOs of companies. Because to be an effective mining CEO, if you've been involved in operation, you become one of the best CEOs, even if it's not like the requirement. But we know if you are operational, you will understand what are the issues, what are the gaps, hence what is it that you need to do as a CEO. So we must understand in South Africa now, why don't we have enough women CEOs in the mining industry?
Well, enough women CEOs full stop. On the JSE, Women's Association did a study, and we have on JSE listed companies, only 3.6% of female CEOs.
That's not where it starts with the JSE and JSE. It starts with the operations. Because if those women, we can make sure that as they get educated in those appropriate areas, then they'll be able to rise.
They have succession planning that's concentrated.
We have to do it. That's why it must include women. That's what I'm saying in the mining industry. If you don't have geologists, mining engineers who are women, or also who continues to be there, then you will never have the right reflection in the JSE. That's where we need to start. How many women become geologists? And where do they end up? And I must say, I'm very excited. I've seen many young women going through education, geologist, mining engineer. But the key, we've got to track them. Where do they end up? Because if we are unable to have that continuous check, monitoring, and also saying if they want to deviate, what makes them to deviate, then we'll always the 3%, the 4%. So it can't start at the JSE. It must start right at the cold face of the various companies in creating professional women who must take over, who must lead, which then will address the issue of representation. Because the representativity for women must be qualitative. I sometimes say we benchmark ourselves in a very negative way as women. We benchmark ourselves against men. And I pose a question, is it the right or an appropriate benchmarking when we look at men and say against men, instead of saying we benchmark ourselves against the best in the world? And if we do that, we'll find ourselves being able to position ourselves appropriately in all spheres, in all areas of our society.
And it builds greater competitiveness and it builds excellence.
Exactly.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chaka-Chaka, an ambassador for the Nelson Mandela Children's Hospital. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program against racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
If you've just tuned in, we're talking to South Africa's Minister of Women in the Presidency, Ms. Susan Shabangu. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Continuing with our discussion. Now, Minister, turning more towards a personal note, As a gender-based radio program, along the year, we have interviewed several of your associate women ministers who have shared their upbringing as children and the role that either their mother or grandmother played in shaping their views and ultimately their future achievements. The issue of mothers has been repeated, I should say strong mothers, has repeated by strong women who were guests on my show. And one word that kept reoccurring was discipline. What is your intake on that?
Well, I must say that I'm one of the few women who was brought up by two parents, very, very strong disciplinarians, both of them. My mom was very strong, my father was very strong. So I was very fortunate to have those kind of two parents who could complement each other. And that's what made me to be what I am, including my father, by the way. He was very strong, but very supportive as we were growing up as their children. So I see that as very important. And I also must say, the mother is very, very key, because they nurture. You know, they bring that element of softness, but also they nurture, they groom you. They make you what you are. I am what I am because of my mother. I must also say, politically, I was influenced by my mother. I must not say directly, you know, as a young girl washing dishes in the kitchen, I would listen to my mother and some other women talking about politics. And, you know, you develop an interest as a child without showing that you listening or eavesdropping on their discussion. But I must say, for me, my mom played a very, very influential role in politics. I mean, including the politics of the ANC, the PAC, how she used when sitting with other women, define and discuss. The ANC is the one which includes Indians and white people. PAC is the one which excludes, you know, listening and trying, being inquisitive, trying to understand that space, for me was very, very important. And I must say, my mother, to a great extent, she did influence my political involvement in shaping and understanding that. I mean, including my understanding of Winnie Mandela and Mandela himself, it was more from my mother than my father, because my father comes from a sports background. He was more of a sports person. And my mom, being always at home, talking about these issues, was very, very interesting. And I think she did play a very, very important role in influencing my political career.
So she has influenced on your side, and you are now in a position where you're influencing a lot of women based on the position that you hold. Going forwards, which areas do you think that we need to build on the most to benefit women in the future?
Well, I must say that as a country, but globally, women have a very, very important role to play and contribute to the economies of the world. That's very, very key. And I think if you look at positions held by women in various areas of the economy, you find that they tend to bring a particular aspect or a different angle as women, more than men. They tend to be much more compassionate, but also they tend to be much more involved in what they do. Whilst men, whilst they contribute positively, but they tend to be distant. You know, they're very cold. For them, it's a job. But for a woman, when it comes involved, it's about success. It's about making sure what you contribute can be sustained. And I think that's what makes us more different. Hence, I believe that more women, if they can become involved in the economy, we could find ourselves changing the economies of our countries. And we must also look at when women become involved in most areas, they tend to be much more progress. So I think we can contribute to the economy in a much more different ways. And I want also to say, we as women also have to play a critical role in making sure that our children do go to school. They must be educated, because that will take us forward. I think the education must be the anchor for women in advancing the interests of society.
Thank you, Minister.
You're welcome.
Now we're coming to the end of the show. Minister, during your career, no matter what position you were heading up, you have done tremendous work concerning women's development, and that has been reiterated in the discussion that we've had today. In closing the conversation, can you please use this platform and send a message of hope to all those women in the African continent that due to circumstances, gender equality may not be first on their agenda, but rather the daily struggle of taking care of their family, raising children, and putting food on the table for them is a more pressurizing reality?
Well, I just want to say to all African women that they must not lose hope. There's a lot they are contributing to the building of families, which is very, very important. But also they play a role in the family values. What kind of families do they bring up, which then contributes to the values of society? I would say for us in Africa, in eradicating gender violence in our society, women have to be firm and strong. But also women have to make sure that they get empowered. Empowered through education, skilling, because that's what will make them to advance their interest and contributing towards the economies of their countries. Education must be, as women, we need to embrace education, whether we are old or young. That must be our ambition, number one, in changing society. Two, as women, we also have to make sure that we find a way of dealing with patriarchy, be it in the form of culture, in the form of tradition. We must break those traditions which continues to push us back as women. I know it's not an easy call, but we have to be committed, because if we don't commit to it, we'll never be able to rise and fight the traditions and the cultures which continues to take us back as society. And I am confident that we might not yet be there as Africa, but lots and lots of African women are rising. We are a continent today which has a chairperson for the African Union, a woman. We are a Africa which is rising despite all the odds, where we've seen women becoming presidents in Africa. No one ever thought during this decade or during this century we'll be seeing more women rising in Africa. I mean, we have said Liberia, we've just seen Zimbabwe having a deputy president. I believe we're on the right track.
We had Malawi,
Joyce Banda. We are on the right track, but also we're seeing more women being able to stand up and be counted and contest the space. That's what is very, very important. It shows that we are on the right track, because it's not just about occupying the space. It's about being ready to contest the space. That confidence shows that we are on the right track. And I am positive Africa one day will have more women presidents. And when that happens, we'll also see the transformation, the achievements, and more women being in various spaces. In business as Africa, we are also cracking that space. In the area of science, we're seeing more women in the science areas in Africa cracking that space. So there are a lot of opportunities. There is hope in Africa. We see an Africa where more women are going to be achievers. So I just want to say to the sisters in Africa, keep strong, keep growing, and keep going. We are on the right path. Let's not look back. Forward ever, backwards never.
Minister, thank you very much for those fantastic words of inspiration. I'm sure they will resonate with all our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You have been listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to South Africa's Minister of Women in the Presidency, Ms. Susan Shabangu. Tune into the show next week when we speak to Mrs. Geraldine Fraser-Moleketi, Special Envoy on Gender for the African Development Bank.